This podcast is produced on the ancestral homeland of the Nooksack and Lummi people. They have been its stewards since time immemorial, respecting the land, river, and ocean, with the understanding that everything is connected, related, and alive. We acknowledge the elders and their collective and individual plights and achievements. We consider the legacies of violence, displacement, migration, and settlement that bring us together today. And we pursue ongoing action to build lasting relationships and grow together so that all may prosper.
WCLS in Whatcom County presents Library Stories, a podcast to open your eyes to all the ways your local public libraries matter. Join us as we reveal the power of sharing at the library. I'm your host, Neil McKay, Online Experience Coordinator for the Whatcom County Library System. And today...
Welcome, friends. It's Whatcom Read season, and there are events going on this week and next, culminating in our author's visit when Sasha Takshabulu-Lapointe will speak at five events, four in person and one online. Today, we're excited to feature an interview with Sasha, the author of this year's Whatcom Reads book, Red Paint, the ancestral autobiography of a Coast Salish punk. But here's the kicker. I didn't interview her. Our friends at Children of the Setting Sun Productions have a podcast that is produced by tribal youth leaders. It's called Yay Podcast, and Yay, Y-A-I, stands for Young and Indigenous. They have been producing episodes since January 2020, and each episode is an amazing window into the young and Indigenous experience. Children of the Setting Sun's production has graciously allowed us to showcase their latest episode, and we are grateful for the opportunity to bring this powerful, sweet podcast to our listeners. We want to encourage you all to go search for Young and Indigenous Podcast, or YAI Podcast, and subscribe on your podcast platform. You won't be sorry, I promise. We're going to sit back and listen as the Yay hosts, Cyrus James and Waikika Curly Bear, talk with Sasha Takshabulu-Lapointe about her book Red Paint and about life and everything else. So join us.
Young and Indigenous Podcast is an outlet for people to know about Indigenous knowledge, storytelling, and history. Through our youthful journeys as Indigenous people, young people and elders share their experiences with us. Without them, we wouldn't be able to do this.
About to tell some red stories. Stay tuned.
Yay Podcast!
My name is Cyrus James. I am a Tulalip tribal member, but I grew up in East Wenatchee with my non-native family.
Anuglitu, Unshuk, Waikihia, Curly Bear, Tuchok, Queen Isle, Tuchok, Bellingham, Chalamas, Yay Podcast. Greetings, my name is Waikihia Curly Bear. My English name is Denise. I come from Queen Isle or the Quinault Indian Nation. I live in Bellingham and I work for the Yay Podcast.
Yeah, welcome to Young and Indigenous. Could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course. Sasha Takshablu Seedsta Twal Nooksack Gwal Skagit. Hi, I'm Sasha Takshablu-Lapointe. I'm from Nooksack and Upper Skagit. Thanks so much for having me.
Sweet, thank you.
Thank you.
So I think we figured we'd start by like talking about the book a little bit and our impressions from the book. Did you want to start with anything?
I'll let you go first.
Okay. What one thing was your relationship with you. What was your great grandmother's name again?
Vi Takshabu Hilbert.
And then who was the one? Was it your great great grandma? The one that got married to the pirate?
I love the pirate. Yeah. He was a bootlegging pirate bastard. Kompsha Kahalawish would have been my great, great, great. Is there another great in there, grandmother? Great, great, great grandmother.
Great. So is that five generations?
I think so. Lois, Kia, like Mama Kia. And then Percy Woodcock was her dad. Myrtle Woodcock was her grandmother. Kompsha was Myrtle Woodcock's mother. Wow. When I was writing this book, I had my mom had given me all of these like family histories and the family tree, and you could like trace it back. But when I was writing, I had that and like newspaper clippings and photographs and old letters like pasted all over my like writing studio wall with little highlighters and stickers. It looked like one of those scenes in a crime like movie where they're hot on the case or like red thread going everywhere. Just like it was wild.
It almost felt like that way in the book too, because like it was so much of your experience and like the rawness of it. And then it was like something about Kompsha, like either a dream or a vision or just like an anecdotal piece mm-hmm. of her. So it like, that was kind of the through line, I think, of the culture in it. Cause a lot of it was your life. And then I wondered like how the red paint would be tied in and like the connection to culture, and that really wrapped together in the end. And I think Kompsha was like the through line for coming to that.
Absolutely.
And like you going to I forget the name of the place.
El Waco.
Yeah. Where the house was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But your story with her, I think, related to me, because like all of our trauma is different, but like you, her being like a mysterious figure that you learned about more and more, both through your parents and through your own digging.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with like my non-native family. And my father's the reason I'm indigenous, but I didn't grow up with him around. So he was always like a mysterious figure to me. And I like when I was a little guy, I read the Percy Jackson books.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, is my father a god?
I love
it. Maybe not, but
am I a demigod?
Yeah. And then he passed away when I was 18. But again, like I didn't really know him, so it wasn't like he was still mysterious to me.
Mm.
But then I was invited to his funeral, of course, at Tulalip, and I got to learn more about him through the people there that knew him and that stories about him.
That's a powerful story. You should write a book.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you're a writer, but wow.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to connect it. But that was like the beginning of that was the first real experience I had with the culture and like with the drums and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like a part of it, we were walking and there was like the drums were playing. And I remember like feeling like really hard to stand. Like it was like we were walking and I my shoulders felt really heavy. But I felt like powerful because I was still standing during that. And I mean, the drums always bring up something in you that's like that you're not always ready for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in particular, like near the end of the book, you talk about being with like the ceremonial drums and stuff and what comes up there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that connection comes from my uncle, Ron Chattiskatib, whose paintings these are. Whenever I felt his spirit, like present, whenever I felt his presence around me, like the drums definitely came. Like, so it was really intense and powerful, grounding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I recognize that feeling you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What stuck out to me, I mean, like the whole book stuck out to me, but like what I feel connected to more is like, I want to say your youth and kind of like you getting married. I grew up in foster care, and like I was on my wrist sometimes, but I wasn't all the time. And I'm getting married now, and I kind of just, it's like I feel lost. Like I told my mate, I don't feel 100% at peace unless I'm on the beach at my res. But I think that's what set up. Yeah, that's what set up to me the most.
That's really beautiful. I can relate so hard to the don't feel at peace unless you're there in that like ancestral space. I feel the same way. That's so real. And I think a lot of my friends right now are like, wow, how do you and your like long-term partner like do this long distance thing? You know, my partner lives in San Diego, I live here, but it's that very reason. Like, I'm like, I can't uproot myself. And it's like, if I go away too long, I feel like I start to wilt, and I'm like, I need to go home. I need to go back to the land, back to the water, and recharge. So that's really, yeah, that's important.
When I read the parts that mentioned Quinault, I thought about you, Waikix, because I don't know if I know anyone else from Quinault.
What is the process of writing like for you?
The process. I think Res Dogs. it changes from book to book. For Red Paint, it was almost like I had to, not in a bad way, but like felt really called to do it in order to kind of begin this journey of like healing, because I feel like I can answer this more from a craft perspective and not get like super in the feels. But the process of writing that book was half like being guided by ancestors like Kompsha and like this research and like digging into them, and then half was like just sitting up alone till like, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning sometimes, kind of surrounded by these photographs and stories and like my great grandmother's books. And I remember one time sitting in a hotel, I had gotten a grant to go down to El Waco and do some of this research. And I was sitting in the hotel room just writing and writing because I'd been researching all day, and I was like wrapped in her shawl. And so it's like, I don't know, it very like, that was a really intense writing process for me, because I was learning more about the women I come from. And sometimes, especially as Native people, that's not always easy for us, right? Like digging into like settler colonial trauma and like these texts that are basically traumatizing to like to engage with, right? Like reading about the smallpox epidemic, reading about Lewis and Clark. And so it was intense. And then I would have to like deeply self-soothe. And so I would surround myself with these, not only like the information I was researching, but like photographs of my ancestors wearing my grandmother's shawl. And just like, so it's like half intense work and then half like, what do you need to take care of yourself? It's so important to like take care of yourself in the writing process when you're writing hard stories.
That's one thing we have to remind ourselves in our workplace sometimes, is like, we're all coming from different places. So like, we're all on a different level of healing with it. And sometimes that means, you know, we can't perform 100% all the time.
Yeah.
So it's something we talk about, I think, frequently, I think. Yeah. And you saying that, like the process of doing the research and what that brings up, that reminds me of like, when you visited that place and some of the ignorance there of like when the one guy described it as
the coach house, yeah, where they kept the wagons.
Yeah. And where it's like, you're wrong, damn it.
I had to work so hard in that moment to channel like my great grandmother. She really moved through the world and navigated the world with a lot of grace and compassion. And there's like a little ragey, like, fiery, you know, a little gremlin in me that wanted to like scream at him and be like, no, that wasn't where they kept wagon wheels. My like ancestor lived there. That's where she slept and cooked and ate and had a life. But I tried to channel great grandma and I was like, I just smiled and, you know, responded, took deep breaths and counted back from 10. And I said, well, actually, and then, you know, politely corrected him.
Yeah. It's probably best he left after that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Garden. You said of my family we were cursed, specifically the women, sick. Unable to be in my body, I got into the bath instead, blood red. With herbs and medicines, I am trying to fix it. I am trying to wash off the sickness. You said of my ancestry, affliction. You said, broken. Like our wedding night, I am trying to fight it. I am drowning in it. This need to fix it. To make myself more white. Not just pale, but Lilium. That delicate shade of maiden. Less red. You said it was my mother and grandmother's doing. Said it was them who made the men in my family death hungry. It's true, you knew the stories. My grandfather, how he wandered the wood at sunset, seeking ghosts. A generation later, my father wanders Tacoma, reaches the hospital, pleading to them, I'm dying at my wife's broken heart, that sad part of her that is killing me.
How does your culture influence you still today?
I think that in everything that I do, whether it's writing or teaching, creating like music when I do or anything that I engage with, I think that my culture influences me in the way that, like, growing up with my great-grandmother's language revitalization work from a very early age kind of installed in me this like great respect for language and culture, and also not to take things for granted, because to see in my early years how hard she worked to keep a language from going extinct, like it taught me really young that our stories, our songs, our culture is like so important and like faced erasure. You know, so I feel like that influences me in most things that I do, to not take things for granted, to always listen and learn. And like, I don't know, I feel like I'm not answering that right. But that's my intuitive answer, is that just moving through the world as a Coast Salish person, realizing that like our ancestors like were faced with like, you know, being punished for speaking their language and being punished for engaging in their culture. So that's with me every day. I try to respect that and feel a gratitude that we have the things that we do. Like,
mm-hmm. Do you have any recent examples or experiences?
I'm trying to think of the right one. Well, for example, on Saturday, I'm going up to my uncle does culture classes with the Puyallup tribe. And so whenever he invites me, even if I'm busy, you know, even if I'm like, oh, I have a lot of papers to grade, or I'm going to California, I've got stuff to do. Whenever he tells me, hey, we have this thing going on, you should come, whenever I can, stop and go. Like this Saturday, I'm going up to his class to finish a paddle that he's teaching me how to make. So we started making a paddle last summer during canoe journeys, and it's not finished yet, but I'm going to be going to do that on Saturday morning, even though it's like a really busy day. I'm like, I'm going to carve out time for that. Like, that's important. What else? I think every time, you know, as I didn't start learning the language until, or attempting to learn the language until I was in my 30s. And so Anytime I try to push myself to incorporate Lachutseed into a poem or a piece, an essay, I feel like that is engaging with my culture. I've been doing that lately. I've been researching different stories that my grandma used to tell. And it's scary sometimes to be a grown-ass adult and standing up there with like fluent speakers, elders and fluent speakers. Like my nieces and nephews speak Lachutseed better than me. I feel like I have cousins that speak it better, you know, like full sentences, because there's full immersion programs now, and that's so awesome. But when I get up there and I'm like, I have a couple of Lachutseed words in this poem, and I get like really intimidated. But the point is to like try, I think, and like, you know, be like, okay, I'm not a fluent speaker. This is not my, that's not my wheelhouse. But oh, I don't like that I just used wheelhouse. It's so close to that story. Let's cut that out. But I think that is something I push myself to do, like bringing the language into my work when I can. Yeah, I also teach at the Native Pathways program at Evergreen, and I feel really lucky to be able to teach at a program, you know, sort of built for Native students. And every quarter we have a longhouse gathering, and to come be with students and be in community feels really important. I feel like I went off on a tangent there. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, and it's great to go on tangents here.
Very good.
We used to have Lummi language lessons, Klemi Chasen, with someone from Lummi. And a big part of it was like our introductions. That's what we were learning all the time. That was kind of like our grounding in it. And part of our introductions was in the Lummi language saying, I don't know the Lummi language and I'm still learning how to speak it. And I feel like that's going to like apply forever. It's like, yeah, we're always going to be learning, even though like I've come away from those lessons and haven't retained a lot of it. Even if I was like consistently practicing, it's like, I'm always going to be learning.
That's a beautiful sentiment too, because of course so many of us are in that stage because of settler colonialism, because of erasure or attempted erasure. I think so many of us are in a stage of learning a traditional language because it was like, we were taught not to speak it, or the generations before us were taught not to speak it, so it wasn't passed down to us.
And speaking of you getting to carve a paddle with your uncle, my dad was a carver. He was a carver and a fisherman, as far as I know. Those are some of the things he did. Nice. Yeah, buddy. and I met one of his carving buddies when they were celebrating his life. And yeah, we got connected. And then later on, I think a year or so later, he invited me to like come carve with him, and he taught me how to carve a paddle.
So you carved a paddle
with like one of my dad's carving buddies. And he said that my dad taught him how to carve a paddle because like the carving masters would take their time with like teaching and like passing on that stuff. But my dad was like, I'll teach you how to do it. So that was a pretty like powerful experience.
That's really beautiful too, to have the person who learned from your dad teach you.
Mm-hmm.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah, I'm really grateful for that guy.
How do you ground yourself when you're far away from home?
Ooh, oh my gosh, I love this question because it's a lot. For example, when I go stay with my partner in San Diego, I loaded up. Like I had like grandma's cedar baskets. I brought cedar from home. I feel like I travel with this like, you know, massive mountain of shells and cedar and baskets. And I'm like, these are my things. This is like where I can set up camp wherever I am. Right. And I think of,
like a first aid kit.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. It's a spiritual first aid kit. But I do get really homesick, right? Like we were talking about. And I try to think of, I think that chapter in Red Paint Linoleum, when my great grandmother used to tell me this story of traveling around from place to place because they traveled up and down the river a lot for work, her parents. And she said her mom would roll up that piece of linoleum and like lay it down on the beach, lay it down in dirt, wherever they were, wherever their, you know, temporary accommodations were. And she said that just that little one material like made them, it was the idea that you can bring home wherever you are, Mine certainly isn't a rolled up piece of linoleum. It is a trunk of, you know, shells and cedar baskets and photographs, but I carry that with me. Yeah.
I love that. One of the ways that helped me, because before I moved up to Bellingham, I was weaving every day from like the time I'd get up to, this was after I graduated high school. I was not skipping school, but yeah, I was weaving every day, just like all day, and my mom would just come and bring me snacks and, are you almost done yet, babe? And stuff like that. So like stuff that helps me is definitely cedar rolls. I have a big bin of cedar in the garage just sitting there.
I love that. I also think that skipping class to weave is okay in my book. I'm like, don't put me on the record for that, or do. That's really cool.
Of the women I come from, you said damaged, said historically, said intergenerationally. From the red bath, I am remembering raccoons, their small paws curled into fists. How my mother must have seen, but didn't miss, didn't hit the brakes, didn't even try to. Instead, my brothers heard the thuds of their bodies beneath tires, as my mother said nothing, but continued driving. You said of my family, we were sick. Specifically, the women suffered something unnameable, quiet sickness, opiate numb. My mother was only trying to dull the pain that had been gifted to her by blood. Red, I am less white beneath my skin, unforgiven by you who was fooled into thinking I was something else. Of my face, your mother said, didn't look Indian. What then? Where do I keep it if not on the skin? Slice me open like a persimmon. Watch blood pour out in red ribbons. Here is where I keep it. In my DNA, you'll find a catalog, a bouquet of heirlooms coursing, written inside my body, a history.
How do you take care of your spirit?
I try to, I love your questions. Yours are just like go straight to the heart. I try to be really mindful ever since the sort of experience of early on in my writing. I think when I was just sort of recklessly going into memory, I wasn't taking care of my spirit. I didn't know that at the time. But the process of writing Red Paint sort of taught me that. And I had to confront like that I was not being careful with myself and careful with my spirit. And so that process taught me a lot. And so now I try to just make sure that I think it's important too, when speaking about trauma and speaking about moving through things, to understand that it's not finished work. It's never like, oh, well, I'm done with that now. Let's wrap it up in a tidy little bow and I'm good now. I think that one part of taking care of my spirit is just the realization that you engage with that healing every day. Like you wake up and you're like, these are the things I'm going to do for myself. Do I need to go, you know, down to my altar and burn cedar and be quiet with myself for a while? Do I need to not make these decisions that are going to drain me or make me feel unsafe? It's just sort of like an active healing that I engage with every day.
I'm glad you're so intentional with it. Sometimes I forget to be intentional with like giving myself space.
Yeah.
And then it sneaks up on you and then you're just like,
yeah,
a wreck.
Yeah, I was experiencing that a lot where it was just like kind of going. And when you don't listen to your spirit, it's like that would happen to me too, where all of a sudden I would just be just so drained and be like, I can't do anything. What's going on? I was like, oh, you need to rest. You need to be quiet. You need to, you know. So yeah, that same thing happens to me if I don't listen.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of us these days can relate with like distracting yourself a lot with like your phone or just having, I have something playing like a lot. Like if I'm have to do the dishes or fold my laundry, I'm like, I'm going to listen to a podcast. And sometimes that's fine. But sometimes it's like I need some quiet time in my day. Mm-hmm. And I need to remember that sometimes.
Yeah. And to go back to, you know, what you were saying about having to go when you feel at peace by the water, that's a big one for me too. Sometimes I just know I have to go either to the woods or to the ocean and just sit there, even just touch the water. That really, like, by yourself, being quiet, like, with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My mate's always like, why don't you just go to the Samish grounds, to the water? And I'm like, I'm an ocean girl. That's not the same. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. At all. I really feel soothed when it's, like, windy and stormy outside. Mm. Or, like, thunder. We don't get a lot of thunder around here. On the east side, we would get, I think, more thunder. I'm sure there's different differences in the pressure and stuff there, but, like, that was always really soothing.
I also feel soothed by storms and rain and, like, yeah, I love that.
Yeah. I feel like I had something else. Oh, I was, yeah, with you mentioned you were reckless with your trauma. Mm-hmm. During the book, I was curious if you, like, had tried, like, therapy during that time and if that had any success for you.
Yeah, I feel like there were two kind of phases of the journey of red paint. The first one was, I don't think I would have gotten to red paint had I not epically failed at Little Boats. And during that time, I guess what I mean when I say reckless with, like, my trauma is that I just dove into those memories and was like, I need to tell my story. I want to write it all down. Like, you know, this could, maybe people will relate to this, but I wasn't taking care of my spirit. I wasn't in therapy. I was just, like, you know, head on charging through these memories that were re-traumatizing. And, you know, a year into that, was diagnosed with PTSD. And it wasn't until I took a huge break after that from writing. Because again, like, when you're quiet enough to listen, like, ancestors will tell you, they're like, girl, you're sick. Your spirit's sick. Like, you need to calm down. You need to, like, so I listened and took a huge break from writing and just kind of did my thing. Worked at a little punk rock pizza joint in Georgetown in Seattle and, you know, waited tables, bartended, joined a band, kind of did that instead. And I needed that break from engaging in those memories and stories. And it was during that time that I got into therapy. And that absolutely helped. I think the break plus therapy helped, you know. And after about a year of not writing, that's when I started to feel stronger and was able to come to red paint. And it honestly was therapy at the break, but then learning more about these women, letting kind of, you know, the story of Kamsha and her strength and who she was sort of guide me and ground me. And so it was like a culmination of all those things.
I haven't gotten into therapy myself. I would like to try someday, but I do, when thinking of, like, my past and stuff, I do, like, think of, like, the inner child, like the younger version of me. And I do consider myself, like, in terms of a community role or my role in, like, my household or with my partner, I feel, like, obligated as a protector in a way that I feel proud of. So, like, when I think of the little guy, like, I'm like, I can protect him now. He's safe with me now. So that's, instead of, I wouldn't call it in lieu of, like, thinking of my spirit, but I think, like, adjacent to, or that's what is helpful for me to consider as, like, the little guy. You know, it wasn't fair what happened to him. He didn't have, like, control of that, but I've got him now.
Yeah. And yeah. I like the duality of, like, both can exist, right? The little guy and the protector. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the book, dreams are really prevalent and the imagery of, like, your family and your experiences. Do dreams still come into play in your life today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I was just a couple weeks ago at Longhouse Gathering. My mom and I presented together, which was really cool. She was presenting the film about our grandma, the symphony at Benner Royal Hall, The Healing Heart of Lachute Seed. And we were in a conversation. It was cool to present with her, but then afterwards, like, we were just chatting. And I brought up a dream that I had recently had. And I've had several dreams kind of similar in nature. And my mom's eyes got kind of big and she was like, oh. And then she shared a dream with me that she had when she was younger that was similar. And it was kind of a cryptic way to answer. But yes, dreams absolutely play a huge role in my life and my process right now.
That's so cool. I feel like a lot of people, I think everyone dreams is what I've heard, but not everyone remembers their dreams. Cause like once you wake up, there's like a high chance you'll forget it right away. But even if a lot of people remember their dreams, they mean like nothing. Like it's like very confusing. It's not like cultural or family stuff. It's like, I don't know. I was chased by a lamp.
Oh, I hate the chased by a lamp dreams. What do those mean? No, I know what you mean though. Like I'll wake up and share a dream, you know, with someone like, oh, this happened. And it's like deeply like culturally significant to me. Right. Or like spiritually significant. And then it's fun when you get the person who's just like, oh yeah, well I was driving a Ferrari, but also like slaying dragons. And then it's like, okay, we don't dream the same.
Yeah.
Like no shade, but you know what I mean?
That's great, man.
Yeah, cool. Slay those dragons with your Ferrari.
I don't have those dreams too often, but when I do, they're pretty crazy. But like recently, my dreams have been more of like designs, weaving designs. So I have like a whole thing in my phone, my note phone, designs that I have to do when I get to it.
Oh, you're getting assignments from ancestors through your dreams.
Dude, that's so cool.
That's amazing.
Can you do you have a photo of the yay medallion that you did?
Oh yeah.
It's she beaded a yay. We should like our logo.
I'm like, ooh, do you have an Instagram I might need to follow?
The sticker.
Oh my god, that's so beautiful.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
And you pointed out the hat has like a weaving pattern with the beads in there, and
I'm like, let me take a closer look.
I was like, oh no, shit.
I was stunned.
Here's a better picture.
Wow, that's gorgeous.
Thank you.
I'm gonna have to follow you.
We brought you some things.
Oh my goodness.
Did you make that one?
Yeah, I made that one.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Tiki seeds, thank you. It's gorgeous. I'm going to put it on right now and have 1 million necklaces, like some kind of indigenous Mr. T. Thank you so much. That's really beautiful.
You have some first aid, some spiritual first
aid. Yeah, my first aid kit. See, now this one is mobile. It can travel on me.
Maybe the plane will let you have it. TSA. Yeah, still thinking about dreams. The only dreams that are significant that I've had involved snakes. I had like one when I was younger, and it was like one of my childhood homes, and there was like a big snake in the backyard. Like I was hanging out with cousins or something, and then a big snake appeared, and we're like, okay, we gotta go inside. And it wasn't like the snake was out to kill us or anything, but like we could tell it was really powerful. Like every time you look at it, there was like tunnel vision.
Wow.
When you see it. So that was that one. And then I had one later, I think in my later teens, of a smaller snake. And it was like a really cluttered space. And it was also like, I was close to it, but it was like, if you touch it, like your limb would become deformed.
Wow.
I don't know. Yeah.
So snakes are showing
snakes,
up for you.
Snakes, I guess, for me.
I don't want to go off on a total dream tangent, but orcas are coming to me. I mean, I've dreamt oceanic and water since I can remember, but recently, like, it's just always orcas, and it's wild. They're intense. They're powerful. Sometimes they're scary, like, or not scary, kind of the way you were describing the snake, where it's not necessarily like a threat or like fear, but it's, there's something powerful and like not ominous, but
I don't know, when you're in a dream, it feels so real.
Yeah.
Like it could be something that's like when I wake up from a dream, it's like, oh wait, that wasn't happening. But when you're in the dream, it's like, it's really hard to tell that it's not actually happening.
100%.
It's all encompassing.
I like keep dreaming that I'm sleeping on the back of an orca. Like it's been reoccurring, and in the moment it's not terrifying, but it's also like, oh, it's so vivid that mm-hmm. I'm like accepting it. And it's not like, I don't know. Now I'm like, and then I was in a hallway, but the hallway was made of cheese. It's always hard to describe dreams, but like the reoccurring thing is definitely the back of an orca, and it's really, really beautiful and intense.
Yeah. That's wild. You're like a powerhouse of Coast Salish dreams.
The orca ones are coming like later in life. I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out right now and talk to folks about it. Roommates? And I was like, yeah, I live with like some really great friends. And then it was funny that was odd, you know, or maybe it was my boss. It was someone recently like, you have roommates? And I was like, yeah, but like, I'm just living like my ancestors did, you know, sometimes there's like 3 to 4 families to one longhouse. Like, it's just, I'm living communally. So I actually really love it.
That's my goal, is to like,
yeah,
I want the land. I want some houses, but I want to live with my friends.
Same.
I don't want to live isolated.
No. Like even I'm also getting married, which is wild. But I'm like, I don't think we're ever going to do the like completely, you know, regular heteronormative like nuclear family. No, I was like, we're going to be living communally until we're like 80 or whenever, you know, like, so yeah, that's the vibe.
I love that.
I might have missed what you do for work. Are you a teacher?
Yeah, I teach at the Native Pathways program down at Evergreen. I teach creative writing, and it's a really beautiful, I really love that program. It's really, really special. Like, we have our Longhouse Weekend coming up next weekend. It's just such a special program.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I wish more people, like, I didn't know about any of that kind of stuff in high school. Like, when I was going to signing up for colleges, I didn't know. And even at Western, I didn't know about like Native groups and stuff there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. We gotta get the message out for those kids.
Yeah. Well, definitely, if you can get the message out about Native Pathways at Evergreen, it's because I could totally relate. When I was younger, I thought I hated school and didn't really love moving through academic spaces. Was a teen runaway, dropped out of alternative high school. Who does that? But later, when I was in my 20s, I learned of the Institute of American Indian Arts, and being in, sure, an academic space, but like also in community with other Indigenous artists and writers. Like, I was like, oh, this is just what I needed. And so something like Native Pathways, it's just important, I think, to be in community, whether it's like a student, like Indigenous student group, or just finding your people. It's important.
Maybe totally. That's what I need in school.
Yeah. Are you in school right now?
No, I dropped out.
Oh.
But when you go back.
If I go back.
Yeah. Come check out NPP. I'll give you a brochure.
Okay.
It's so cool.
Do you have any projects coming up?
I do. Well, Thunder Song, the Book of Essays, comes out March 5th, which is really exciting and surreal.
And next week.
Oh my God, that actually is next week. Like wow, that's crazy. So that comes out, and we'll be doing some readings and events for that. Going to Bellingham for 4 days, which I'm excited about. And I'm also working on, I feel like I'm always, as a true Gemini, I'm like always juggling a couple different things. I'm writing a lot of poems right now, a lot of poems about orcas and water and the beach. A lot different from Rose Quartz. That collection was so focused on like personal healing and stuff, as was Red Paint. But with these poems, I'm just sort of being called to, like, you're getting patterns in your dreams. I'm getting water and beaches and whales. And so that's sort of driving my my poetry currently.
Word. What else do you do in your free time, when you have free time?
Oh, gosh. I'm like, when do I have free time?
I like to ask that question to people, but I'm like, I shouldn't assume they have that much free time. Because a lot of people are like, I don't know.
No, but it's a good question. And when I'm not writing or working, I really love to be in the woods. My partner and I go on a lot of hikes. We go swimming a lot. I like to spend time in the woods and the water. I also love to go to shows. Up until recently, my bandmate and I were playing weird music in her basement a lot and recorded a demo. And like, we've taken a big break, but we might start up again. I think we just released a single, just a song that we recorded last summer called Tulips, because I have an essay called Tulips in Thundersong, and we were talking about it, and she was like, we should actually put that song out, because we recorded it but never did anything with it. And so yeah, that's what I like to do. I like to swim, I like to be in the woods, I like to like play bad punk music.
So yeah, so you are very punk. Are there any like runner-up genres for you?
Oh, for sure. Like definitely anything dark wave, gothy, like synth, dancey, shoegazy, like, you know, sad girl music. Also, yeah, just been really listening to a lot of Snotty Nose Res Kids. Like,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Do you know who the OCs are?
No.
No? Okay. It's fine. I'm always curious.
Of the women of my family, you said addiction, said submission. From the red bath, I wrap a towel around my nakedness. Bergamot and rose petal still clinging to my breasts. I set the cedar down carefully and step to the mirror, to the face looking back as it says, shapeshift. Says, shake this off or wilt. A pale tulip tossed at his feet.
What advice do you have for Native youth?
I think kind of what we were just talking about, to like find your people, like find community. That was so important to me. And I think that when we feel less alone, we can kind of let our communities like be our chosen family. So I'd say like finding like your people, finding community, and just finding what you love to do as well. And like just deep diving hard into it, because that's really important to like move through this world as an Indigenous person. We like carry a lot of stuff. We carry a lot of trauma, generational trauma, all of these things, but we also carry a lot of strength and resilience. And I think that that comes forward and comes like more powerfully through when we are with people that love us and care about us and want to see us thrive.
It's like giving youth cultural roles. Mm-hmm. So like filling the cultural void that they may have.
Yeah.
And that like can take away the temptation or like the void to be filled with like substance abuse or whatever it might be. So yeah, I would echo that. Like find your place, find your community.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have any questions for us?
Yeah, I do actually. So how do you, like, you guys have shared a little bit, but like, I thought about asking this before we even got started. Outside of this podcast and knowing the work you guys do with the Children of the Setting Sun, what else do you do? Like, what do you guys do for fun? And
do you want to go first?
Like outside of work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I go to the gym, and that's been helping me out this winter a lot. So, like, weight training specifically. I find a lot of fulfillment in that, and like, seeing progress and, like, engaging with it. Like, the, like, mind-to-muscle connection. I feel like as you get stronger, that connection gets stronger, and it becomes, like, more and more enjoyable. I'm a gamer, so I play video games. And I play Magic the Gathering a lot, which is like, you know, the card game.
Oh, I know it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I learned how to play it a few years ago. I freaking love it.
Yeah. It's a deep pit. Yeah. Yeah. A lot to get into. Those are the main things that I love being with friends and stuff.
Very cool.
I weave a lot. I also just picked up beading. And other than that, I'm a newly mom.
Congratulations.
I'm in the process of adopting my niece. So,
Oh my gosh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Shout out Nicole.
Shout out Cole.
I also do cold plunges when I can.
Yeah.
I always want to go through the winter because like I feel like when it starts getting colder in like August, I'm like if I just keep doing it, I'll get used to it. And I can do it through the winter, but then something always stops me. Like I get sick or I like get a new tattoo. So I have to like stay out of water.
I feel like, there's something deeply healing or something about cold water when I meet other people that enjoy cold plunges, I'm like, yeah, there's something about it. Right. Like, I think even just this last, it was not warm. It was summer, but it was freezing water. And, you know, I was out in Port Townsend with a bunch of poets and we went down to the beach at night and there were bioluminescence. Like you could see the water kind of twinkling like blue and purple. Like it looked like the cosmos in there. And so I was like, well, I'm getting in. And no, like I was with like four other people on the beach and they were like, it's like 10 o'clock at night. And I was like, don't care. And I just dove in and swam. And like, I'm usually the only person in the group that does that. But so clearly we need to hang out more if you guys are into that. So I won't be the only one.
Yeah. I resonate with that. Some, like a lot of people are like, no, you're crazy. But then when someone does, you're like, you get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're onto something. Yeah. They're the ones that.
And you feel great the rest of the day. And I swear when I'm doing it consistently, I don't get sick.
Yeah.
Like I'm good. I'm solid.
I feel like there are spiritual health benefits and like physical health benefits to it. Like, there's got to be.
Yeah.
I don't do it often, but when I do, it just makes me so happy. Like I only like to do it when I'm at home. And I don't know, I might be biased, but home water is the best water to me. But it just makes me, it soothes me, and then it just makes me so happy. Like, nothing's wrong in the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For that moment underwater, nothing is wrong in the world. Agreed.
I think I got turned on to it because it was like a day or two after a leg day. So my, you know, your legs get most sore like 2 days afterwards. And my partner and I were like going through the Whatcom trails and we couldn't quite find the way, like the bridge to get like back across, like to the side that we lived. So we had to like, I was like, let's just go across right here, across this part of the stream. And it was like waist deep water. So we like took our shoes off and we were kind of wading through it. And you had to be like really careful because it was flowing pretty hard and you didn't want to lose like your gripping or anything and fall. So it was like, you gotta be really slow. So our legs were just in there for like a while. And it was like the numbing level of the, and then you get used to it and it's nice. And then afterwards you're just like glowing.
And it does something to circulation, right? Yeah. So if you just worked out and were sore from it, it probably did good things for your muscles. Okay. Well, I feel like when I'm up in Bellingham soon, let's commit to a cold plunge when I'm there.
I haven't done it this year, so that'd be good.
Yeah.
I've only done my legs this year, so it'd be good to jump in.
I'm going to look at my schedule and find some free time and pencil in a you're jumping into cold water hour. T
Do you still, you know, you mentioned that really special moment being taught to carve the paddle by the person who was taught by your dad. Do you still engage with that, or are you still able to go there, and is that part of your life right now?
I'm able to. Like, I'm still in contact with him, but I haven't yet. So I would like to, but yeah, we're still connected on Facebook.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Cool guy. We recently learned a couple of our fellow youths are like into like drawing and stuff, and they do a little bit of carving, and we had like a little workshop recently, just like learning the basics of Kosalis drawings.
Oh, rad.
And like differentiating like what's Northern art and like what basically like what's not Kosalis and like mm-hmm. what is Kosalis, and just working on those. And then
that's very cool.
Yeah. So that was like pretty cool, and like found like a new way to doodle.
Yeah.
Doodling in Kosalis.
Doodling
cool.
in Kosalis. A new memoir. And then I have a question for you, because you said you just picked up beading, but you are a baller at it. Like, that
Thank
design
you.
Was beautiful. Do you have a page, or do you? Can I follow you and like?
Yeah, I have a page. I haven't posted like a lot of my artwork on there. I'd say more of my artwork's on Facebook.
Okay, good to know.
For sure.
I'm like, you have a gift, so
thank
I just
you.
Want to know that you're out there.
Well, thank you, Sasha, so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure getting to know you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really beautiful.
Heishka Hort.
Bye.
Hoi.
Thank you to our funder, the Inatai Foundation. This episode is produced by Waikikia, Cyrus, Roy, and Ellie. Music by Keith Jefferson, Adam Lawrence, and Mark Nichols. Poetry by Sasha LaPointe and her band Medusa Stare. Ye is a part of Children of the Setting Sun Productions.
I hope you enjoyed this special episode. This interview of Sasha Takshablu LaPointe is from the Young and Indigenous Podcast, the Yay Podcast, from Children of the Setting Sun Productions. Please look them up on your podcast platform and subscribe, or visit them on the settingsunproductions.org website. They're doing amazing work in capturing some important voices for all of us to listen to. We want to thank Sasha Takshablu LaPointe, first for her incredible memoir, Red Paint, the ancestral autobiography of a Coast Salish punk, and then also for her upcoming Whatcom Reads appearances. Check the whatcomreads.org website to see where Sasha will be presenting. You don't want to miss the opportunity to see her. Finally, as always, a shout out to my boss, Mary Vermillion. Podcasts are the work of a team, and Mary is my team's captain. Oh, captain, my captain, rise up and hear the bells. Until next time, this is Neil McKay for the Whatcom County Library System.